At seven? Freeform music?
I believe so.
I don't think I've ever said those words in a row before. Yeah. So I have a feeling this is a new sheet. Roots Rock and Reggae at 8 p.m. and get in your jammies at 10. Sorry, that was loud. Never more true than today, Linda. The show must go on.
And there's so many shows going on.
Right. And so if all those other shows can go on, then surely our show can go on, right?
Yeah, we have so much to talk about because we're in the middle of February frenzy.
Yes,
did
I did.
I cued you.
I know
didn't
you cued
even do
me.
Yes.
And you have my little fancy postcard in front
I
of
do,
you with
I
all
do.
Six of the amazing shows that are going on in February, five of which are going on this week. And I don't know in all
you have no excuse the, not to get out there and see something.
Right.
Right.
But I wish we had like, this is where it would be great when we've been doing this for like 25 years to go back and say, in the last 25 years, there have never been five shows going on simultaneously.
I hope that most months have this many shows.
No,
going
that's
on.
Why it's a frenzy, man.
Okay. All
I'm
right.
telling you, this all is right. unusual.
So
let's talk about it.
Opening,
one of these is your show.
It's opening night for I Hate Hamlet.
Yes.
I'm super excited. I almost didn't make it tonight here because
yeah.
It's snowing, but it's warm inside the theater, but that means I have to take care of outside the theater. So I was trying
to get
shovel
salt down
and stuff. Yeah, but yeah. So
okay, but it's a safe environment to go to the station.
It's a safe environment and it's warm and I turned on the coffee maker. There's going to be hot coffee. There's going to be cookies and there's going to be a wonderful cast. You got to see it last night.
Yes.
What did you think?
All right, let's just talk the brief review, brief review of this show is that it's definitely one of the most kind of like awe-inspiring theater spaces to walk into at the station. It's never felt that big.
The set is amazing.
Yeah, it is. And yeah. I saw, you know, you've posted pictures kind of going along as the set's been coming together. And some of those pieces seemed so big, and I view the station space as so small that I didn't think it could work. But what instead has happened is it's just a magnificently large. Now, I've seen New York apartments before. This is bigger. And so this is probably like $2,500 a month to rent the station right
at
now
least.
As
yeah.
an apartment.
Yeah.
And it's really transformed into a really broad space where a lot of fun can happen, where gigantic sword fights can happen.
Yes.
Where
and
seances can happen,
right.
where ghosts can come back from the dead. And Kevin
romance.
Paul Wickert is just freaking amazing. Amazing as John Barrymore.
Yeah.
And you know that's hard for me to say because I wanted that part. I wanted it.
I know you did.
And so you're going to arrange for the cast to get together with me afterwards to do a little Eric performance of Barrymore. But I could not have done it this well. Kevin is fantastic. I've seen him in a lot of other things, and so I didn't know if I'd be able to suspend previous Kevin Wickert characters, and he was brilliant. And the rest of the cast is really good too,
yeah.
but I was mesmerized by him and the whole idea of the show, which is to get this actor to love Shakespeare and to love Hamlet. I found myself, as a non-Shakespearean guy, thinking, I should really give Shakespeare a shot, because he has convinced me.
Right.
And
okay,
so
good.
Just like James Hevel did, convinced me that opera can be worth listening to.
See,
now Kevin has convinced me that maybe Shakespeare is worth listening to.
Art opening up your horizons. I
yes,
love that.
It
but
is.
But you don't have to walk away wanting to see Hamlet. It's wonderful. It's in its own right. And it's relatable even if you're not an actor or into Shakespeare, because I think it's about like finding yourself and figuring out, like, you know, he kind of, Andrew, the main character, figures out his relationship.
Second main character, in my opinion.
Okay, sorry. You're right. I hate the term main character anyway. Thank you for stopping me there.
Andrew's great.
Andrew.
And he's going to be in falsettos. He is coming to town. He's taking the theater world by storm. I will let you talk.
He's like, you've got to be on tonight. And then I try to talk and you keep interrupted me, which is fine.
I'm fixing my sweater. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're trying to figure this out. No, it's relatable even if you're not an actor, even if you're not into Hamlet. It's very funny. It's very fast, witty. There's sword fighting, like you said. But it's also kind of about finding yourself. Like, different characters kind of find themselves, except for Gary. He has no growth in the show at all. So.
Well, you know, last season in all of the community theater groups, there were 19 shows, and maybe one or two of them was light and fun.
And this one's very light and fun.
There's some good love stuff. Right. There's some good, like you said, finding yourself stuff. But it's also just a really fun, well written, hilarious show.
Right.
And so I think it's going to, it's going to be a nice little relief. And especially when we talk about some of these other shows that are so serious and so dark even.
Did we ever talk about Bus Stop yet? Have we talked about it?
No, we haven't.
Can I say a couple things about Bus Stop since I saw it?
Talk about Bus Stop, because I'm going this weekend. You went last weekend.
Right.
And Bus Stop is at the Twin City Theater Company, and no show tonight, but the next three nights.
Right, right. And this is the last week to catch them.
Yes.
And I think Bus Stop has a lot of, it's funny, it has some funny parts, and it has some serious parts, and so it's kind of a combination. So it's not super heavy, but it is about relationships in a very short time frame, just a night where the bus breaks down and they have time to get to know each other. New relationships start, relationships end. It's amazing what can happen in a, like, I don't know, 6 hour time frame or whatever it's supposed to be. But it's funny, and it's
super
deep.
Creative use of the space over there at the
Wonderful
Soviet Theater too.
Wonderful use of the space. I hate Hamlet. Wonderful use of the space. And then Bus Stop, a different wonderful use of the space where they didn't build anything. They just used what they had and then put a bunch of props in there. And it's, I love both of those.
Right. So that's at the Soto Theater, downtown Twin City Theater Company, the next three nights. Hunchback of Notre Dame opens tonight at Centennial High School. That's the combined C2 Theater Productions. So both Central and Centennial's drama departments have gotten together. They cast this thing a long time ago. They've been working on sign language and sign language clinics back since the end of the summer. And we had LaDon on the show. She talked about that last week. But that's going on Centennial tonight, tomorrow night, and then Saturday night, and then there's a Sunday matinee.
That's double cast, right, for some of the...
That is double cast for most of the roles, for most of the primary roles.
So where can they find out what cast... Is there a website or anything?
They have to
go. Did I just ask you something? Okay, never mind.
No, they can go to the CU at the show Facebook page.
Oh, right, right.
Yes, we've got all the cast lists, all the information you could ever want. But why not just see both casts and play it safe?
Because
there's five shows.
Radium Girls.
Yes, there is. And we're going to talk about How I Learned to Drive, which is at Parkland College. But we are also here, and we have Alyssa Pavlakis, who is a director of Radium Girls at Urbana High School, in the studio with us. How are you today, Alyssa?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Well, you know I'm not. I'm frazzled.
But we're actors, so we pretend.
Yes,
right?
We are. Or we're hosts of shows because we couldn't get roles.
Let it go.
This is my therapy. Come on.
So tell us what Radium Girls is about.
So Radium Girls is the story. It hits very close to home because it happened near Chicago. But it's the story of these dial painters who, when radium first became a discovered element, they started putting it into paint and then using it to paint the dials of the watches that they would send to the soldiers that went overseas so that they could see their clocks in the dark. But the company asked the girls to put the brushes in their mouths because it would give it a finer tip and they wouldn't use as much paint.
Oh, crazy.
Obviously radium eats calcium. Mm-hmm. So it started to degrade their bones and hundreds of women died. So it's the story of a few very special women based on a true story who fought the company. And, well, you'll have to see how it finds out. I'm not going to tell you the ending.
So how many people are in the cast?
So there are 11 stage actors, and then we have probably total 35 people involved in the production.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So by stage actors, are they covering all of the whole breadth of the 30 or so roles? Is
so
that what
you
mean?
So there are 35 roles and 11 actors. So it's a little Laramie Project-esque that everybody plays like six people. So quick changes are a real thing.
Right.
That are... are making me get nightmares.
Yeah, I had a copy of the script, and I was wondering, do you have to do it that way? Like, if you had 30 actors, could you just do it that way? But it looks like it's meant to be played by somewhere between 9 and 11 people.
Yes, it's like 9 to 11. There are 5 different options, and you could do it with 30, but they'd be such small roles.
How much of the history of the real Radium Girls did the cast kind of get into? Did you have them go beyond the script?
So we spent actually a long time at the beginning. I read, there's a book called Radium Girls that's pretty thick. It's about 400 pages. And I actually read that and then took excerpts and made my actors read them. And then we did case studies where they had to do research on the people that they were representing. And then we made a character map of those people because it got really confusing. There's like 9 dentists in the show.
So
we actually got pretty deep into the history because we wanted to make sure that we got it right. It's a really important story, I think.
Right.
It sounds like a really sad story.
Oh, yeah. So bring your tissues.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, important. So
have you, to get ready to talk to you about this, when I was kind of researching a little bit, I found the script, read the first 10 or 20 pages, and I was having a hard time figuring out how they were doing it. It seemed to jump around in time a lot between is it the founder of the watch company? Is he one of the main characters?
Yes, Mr. Reader.
Yeah. And so the characters seem to age maybe 9 or 10 years, over the women do.
That's correct.
But the guy maybe has even a broader time lapse.
Yes, we actually see him later on in the 40s. So we meet his young daughter, who's 7 or 8, at the beginning of the show. And at the very last scene, we see his daughter again, and she's like 25, 26. So
I really want to hate that guy, and I don't know anything other than
that. Yeah, get ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the point. Yeah, so do you actually age your actors, or do they act any different depending on the time frame?
Definitely the girls start to act different because they begin to, you know, have the radium eat away at their bodies.
Right.
I would say that we put more age makeup on Reader, but he starts as an older gentleman to begin with. So I wouldn't say that his character changes all that much, but what I really like about his character is it's round. Like, you want to hate him, but the show makes it really hard to.
Huh.
So it's interesting in that way.
Wow. Well, yeah, there was a quote that I had where he said he knew what we were doing, but we didn't know that it was bad. And so, like, I'm a lawyer in my non-theater world time, and I think about that quote, and that really is, it almost sounds like somebody trying to get away with murder by saying it was just manslaughter. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I killed him, but I wasn't trying to.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a really harsh story. And I watched, have you heard of the little short movie animated called Glow?
I have.
Oh my God. That was powerful. So if you want to know like a little brief synopsis of what Radium Girls is about, there's a 5-minute, I think award-winning short film called Glow that's just findable publicly on YouTube that kind of takes us through a nutshell of the story, I think wordlessly, about the making of these radium watches.
Yeah, and the show itself is really incredible because it's actually really pertinent to what we're going through right now in our world. It talks about media and how it controls our perception of things and how these girls just put the brushes in their mouth because their boss told them to, and the media said that radium was great, it was going to cure cancer, and, you know, we have a very fine line between truth and what might not be truth at the moment in media. So I think that it's an important reminder that you can't trust everything that you hear. So I thought it was an important message to share with our kids.
Definitely.
Well, to show that you do more than just sad and serious stuff. Although, you know what? Theory of Relativity was very serious, and I love that show. And I just want to play like a couple notes here because I did find my audio of it. That was just a little clip of Nothing Without You from Theory of Relativity.
Was that audio you took? I can't remember.
Yes, with permission, of course.
Of course, with permission. Course. But that's just really amazingly beautiful. I loved that show.
I have to tell you, when we started to do Theory of Relativity, I think when we chose it, we were like, oh, this is just going to be a musical that we do just like any other musical. Not that all our musicals aren't special, but Gosh, I fell in love with that show. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we'll ever do anything that touches me in the same way that that one did.
Yeah.
It was a magical story and a magical collaboration between me and my co-director.
Right. And you're trying to raise money right now.
Oh, yeah. We need $25,000. So we're doing everything that we can think of to try and get our kids money.
Yeah. And the reason why they're raising money is because this film was selected to as one of 11...
Show.
Did I say film?
Uh-huh. Yes. It is a show. It is not
I'm watching film of it. Okay. So it was this play was selected to be to perform at the International Thespian Festival, one of only 11 shows,
mm-hmm.
and it's only in just one state away, but it still is incredibly expensive to pull this off. So I know that on our Facebook page we have the link to where you can go to the GoFundMe page mm-hmm. for. Theory of Relativity, mm-hmm. and are you having other events?
Yes, so one of our big events that we're going to do is we know that we have a big theater community here in Champaign-Urbana, and so we're going to have a youth workshop on March 29th from 1 to 5 p.m. We're going to invite any kids who are interested in theater. We're going to have like blood-making workshops, and we're going to teach a little bit of our Freaky Friday dance.
What age group is that for?
We are saying all the way up through eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, you know, first graders to eighth graders. We'll have different stuff for different kids. But we're going to have a little bit of everything. We're going to do backstage tours. And the first 50 people who sign up get some UHS swag. So.
Oh, fun.
Is there information on the Urbana Theater Facebook page about this?
Absolutely, it is.
Great. And then,
so we can put a link
on. So I will lift it from there and put it on ours as well. And we will spread the word because, Theory of Relativity is a great show and it deserves this kind of recognition. It's got to be a wonderful thing for your young actors and actresses to get to do this. Is there a lot of overlap between the Radium Girls cast and the Theory of Relativity cast?
Not really. The really great thing about Radium that I love is that almost, I would say 90% of them have never had a lead role before. And so I would say 50% have never been in a show before.
Wow.
That's great.
So we had a lot of new turnout, new blood, and they've just grown so much in this show. So I really like that about Radium.
So all when can we see the show?
Radium Girls, you can see it tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at 7 p.m. and on Sunday at 2:30 at the Urbana High School.
All right. Well, Alyssa, thanks for joining us on See You at the Show. I look forward to getting out to see Radium Girls this weekend and best of luck with everything at the festival.
Thank you so much.
I'm so happy for your students, for your actors who get to go and the show gets to go on.
Awesome. Thank you
so much.
All right.
Thanks for coming in. All right. So the other show going on that we haven't mentioned yet is How I Learned to Drive at Parkland. We saw that. When did we see that?
We saw it opening night.
Yes, we did. And so it's running for... another weekend here. Your son Parker is in it.
He's
fantastic. And one of the great things that I didn't even know this, but when I was getting ready to go see it, and I was looking through Facebook and just searching various things, and then I saw a name pop up, Tom Schnare. What in the world? And now he's in the studio with me. Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Great. Now, and so this shows that I'm like a historical theater novice because I should have known, and now I do know, that you directed How I Learned to Drive at the station in 2012.
Yeah, that was my first production for them.
Really?
I didn't realize it was your first. Wow.
Yeah, that was my maiden voyage. I'd done Parkland up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also directed in Charleston, Illinois at the Cat Theater and at Charleston Community Theater. So, but yeah, up here, it was Parkland, one CUTC show. And then I transferred over to the station.
Mm-hmm.
There I am.
There you are. Well, you know, it's always a mystery how shows and directors and everything get selected at the station. Even though I'm on the board, I have no idea how the magic happens. But was this a show that you wanted to do, or were you?
Yeah, I was really fortunate with all the shows I did at the station. Only two of the eight shows were selected for me. All the others were little projects, and some of them were things like mine. I was like, this is about a fairy that kidnaps a baby and then said it's really complicated and really dark, and I was like, there's no way. And then they said sure. So yeah, I was very fortunate that most of the things that I directed I actually owned and was pumped about and said I really want to do this, and they were super dark because of that, because I need therapy.
So what made you super pumped about a story of a young teenage girl who has a, let's just say it, pedophile of an uncle?
Being a survivor of sexual abuse myself, not from relatives, but from in high school encounters, I related to it a lot. I also liked Paula Vogel's ambiguity and the way that she tells the story backwards, mm-hmm. so right. that when you start with it, and I think it read more in our production than in the current production. I think that's both because of, it's now 2020 and we've talked a lot more about the issue. And also, we had a bigger age range in our actors. But it read more as, this might be okay, these people might work this out, to, oh my God, that's what happened. As opposed to, in the current production, it's pretty evident that abuse and coercion are happening from the beginning.
Yeah. So I did, you know, kind of as the setup for having you come on the show, I did kind of want to make sure that you had seen the current production, because it's something that I haven't done here on the show, and it's just fascinating to me to think about, especially as somebody who's never directed, to think about a director having directed something, then watching subsequent versions and visions of it.
It's like meeting the clone of your own child.
Yeah.
And you look at it and you go, hey, that looks like my kid. And then they start doing things and you're like, that's not how they talk. That's not how they talk. Who is that person? But they look like my kid. Are they going to eat my face?
Right.
So it's a little weird.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's kind of like when you read a book before you see a movie, and then you yeah. invent characters in your head.
And I'm super except good you, at putting that out. But
yeah. You know, but one, what a cast you had, too. Yeah. I mean, when Chris Tabor,
Tom Miller,
and Malia was in it, right?
Malia Andres, Sarah Heyer, and Nick Morris, and just couldn't ask for a better group.
Wow.
We had a great cast of five. I believe the production at Parkland has a cast of eight.
Yeah.
And the cast of five is what's scripted, but it's understandable that you would broaden that because of opportunities for more kids. And also, there's a couple of really dicey quick changes that you have to think about and breathe hard with, because when the sister and mother come on and off, it's literally lickety split, and we had full costume changes because it was Malia. Mm-hmm.
So the kind of the demographical casting choices that you made. Now, was this something? Did you make choices based on who auditioned, or did you already have in your mind that you wanted to have an adult, like a well formed 30 to 40 year old adult?
The script said that it wanted someone in their early 40s, I believe is what it said. And actually, some people on the production crew, since I was new, sort of argued for someone younger. And I did see about 25 actresses and actors, but it was mostly actresses for a little bit. And looked at a variety, but I felt like for the first and last moments, you needed someone with some age to them. And that was just a personal preference to mine, so that they would get some things and like having a relationship that is complicated, that you're naturally attracted to someone, but you know that it's very bad for you, and you know that you got into it in a very questionable way. And I think that's the gravitas comes from that with age.
Yeah. When I think you've seen it by now, I put together like a little photo, not really montage, but like a comparison.
Yes.
Of even the cover poster. So the Parkland show has
very different.
I guess it's somewhat ominous, I guess, looking at that steering wheel and thinking like, okay, what's there's up? Like there's a lot of mystery
and Haley's
there.
Look in there.
What does this mean?
It's very
and the color
different.
Choice.
But
right.
the kid's paper. Feet standing on the adult's dress shoe. My God,
that
Tom.
Was my idea.
Oh and my God,
that's where my brain goes.
Yeah,
and we actually got a letter of complaint to the News Gazette over that.
Then well so. Done.
Well done. Right. Yeah. Because someone didn't know what the show was, and when they went to it, they were like, what? And I was like, it won a Pulitzer Prize. Look it up before you go.
Right. Well, I think that and then also just looking at, you know, I wish that it had been videotaped, because I would love to see Tom and Chris perform
and
that.
I really want them back together at some point.
But you took the, they went all in on this.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it.
Tabor is called it life-changing, and it's the best thing I've seen Tom Miller do. And I've seen, and he was in My Angels America Part One at Parkland, and was also in Duck Hunter Shoots Angel. So I've worked with him a lot, but he went into some really uncomfortable places with Uncle Peck that was very brave of him to do.
Yeah,
because I think a lot of actors would have been like, nope.
Well, and I think that the kind of, and I wanted to almost use the word sanitized version of the way that it shows at Parkland, but because there is no touching, there's a lot left to the imagination.
And that's actually scripted. The script it's very early on, but it does say don't touch. We didn't follow that rule. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Right. That makes sense.
But they did. That very beginning where they're sitting side by side and he's making the movements of touching your body but not touching your body, that's scripted. And we turned it into something else that was more unsettling for the audience because there were people. It's really weird with a show like How I Learned to Drive to go, did you like it at the end?
Right.
It is a relative term. And it gives you the heebie-jeebies.
It's supposed to make
you super uncomfortable and make you think on the ride home and several days after. And we accomplished that, but there were some people that were like, I just didn't like how the lines were so blurry. Our entire set was gray because our set designer was like, it should be shades of gray. And I was like, yeah, that's brilliant. Perfect.
Yeah. Now I'm sitting here feeling like weird that I said, I really wish I could have seen that because I don't know. It is really complicated when you have a piece of art that is this dark, you know, to be, especially as somebody in the audience or somebody even prospectively reviewing it, like, how do you say that was really good?
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
It's okay for dark things to be good, though. It makes you think and it makes you grow as a person just watching it. So.
And this was well before trigger warnings. So it was one of those situations where we had people leave in tears and we had people locked in the bathroom.
Right.
That had took a while to say, this is what I thought of the show, because it was so personal to them.
Had you seen the show done before you did it?
I saw it one time at U of I, and they did that in, like, I want to say probably before I moved up here, so 99, 98, somewhere around there. And it was a very different production than either of the productions, and lots of tech that was amazing. But I fell in love with it. After reading it, and then I saw that almost immediately after I read it, because they did it right after it got off Broadway.
I was surprised how many people who have been in it before, or seen it before, really fall in love with that show, because it's not a show that, it seems kind of funny to say that you fall in love with something so incredibly painful to watch, it's not painful to watch, but it can be triggering and painful.
And so
Heather Ann, who also works at Parkland, I talked to her after we saw the show, and she said that she was in it in either high school or college, and that's why she was so excited that Parkland was going to do it.
I think Parkland deserves a lot of credit for taking something that dark, because they haven't been doing that historically,
right?
And for letting the students do that.
Especially as a student production.
Mike Trapetti sent me a message saying that a Station Theater alum, Mark Brokaw.
Yes.
Do you know Mark?
Yes. I don't know him. I know of him. But yes, he directed either the revival or...
Yeah. Well, it says, according to Mike, he sent me a message on the See at the Show Facebook page saying that Mark Brokaw directed the original production of How I Learned to Drive and won an Obie for it.
Yeah.
And he's currently directing it again on Broadway with the original cast.
Nice.
So,
Mary Louise
excited.
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, right.
Mary Louise Parker, who is, in fact, Chris Tabor's cousin.
No way.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, this almost feels like all the coincidences from I Hate Hamlet coming through.
Right,
like
indeed.
All this serendipity in the room. Well, that's really interesting, too, because I bet when Mary Louise Parker was... She was probably like close to the age of the Parkland kids when she did it originally, and now she's more like Tabor's age.
30-ish, and now she's more like Tabor's age. So
yeah.
And then they had another revival right at the time that we'd done it on Broadway. That was she was on Grey's Anatomy, and she was in she was on Grey's Anatomy, and had a car crash where her face was crushed, and then the doctor fell in love with her before he could see her face. I don't know the actress's name.
It sounds like a great setup anyway.
Yeah, there you go. But she did the thing, and they had this huge Cadillac that drove across the set whenever they drove. It was
wow,
quite an impressive production.
Well, Tom, you're getting back in the directing game this summer, right? You're yes. going to be directing for CUTC, Heidi Chronicles.
Or not CUTC, Twin Cities.
Twin City. Great. TC, all okay. the TCs it's are right. yeah. I'm good. Sorry.
It's easy to
okay, and those. So we can look forward to hearing more about that. Auditions are going to be May 2nd, and then the show is going to go mid-June.
Yes, and the comedy about feminism, and it'll make you think, but it'll also make you laugh.
Okay. All right. Wow. Well, thanks, Tom, for coming on See You at the Show.
Thank you.
Everybody, go to the See You at the Show Facebook page. Information about all five shows that are going to be playing this weekend is up there. I'll be out, bad back and all, seeing shows all weekend. So hopefully I will see you at the show. And see you at the show tonight,
yeah,
Linda.
Yeah, come visit me at I Hate Hamlet Station Theater tonight.
All right. Coming up next, Surfer Billy Freakout.